Back on Date with the Night with an artist out of South London whose dystopian gothic post-punk is making waves across the UK and beyond. I've had their latest single, May I Comply, on repeat since it was dropped early November. I'm so stoked to introduce to you Jojo Orm, aka Heartworms. How are you today?
Hi, I'm really good, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm so happy to have you on the pod. I've been like following your music for the past year, a little over a year, and I've loved everything that you've been producing, coming out with, and I'm just really impressed with you as a young artist. And I wanted to get into your beginnings as an artist, I guess, by asking you, what were your musical influences growing up?
My mum was a massive influence when it came to music. She wasn't a musician herself. She played really good music, and there's lots of Michael Jackson, lots of Prince, Celine Dion, and all the kind of greats. And I was a very shy child, so I used to pretend I didn't enjoy it in the car. And she'd play it really loudly. And then I'd like subtly, because there was one song by Michael Jackson I really liked, which is Dirty Diana. And I was like softly trying to tell my mum without making it an issue or a thing, saying, could you play that song again by Michael Jackson, like the Dirty Diana song? Through that, I never gained confidence to even tell my mum I wanted to do music and stuff. It took me a while. So all these influences came through, such as Ben Howard came through around in 2012 when I was doing my GCSEs, then The Shins. That's as far as I can think of the early stages of my influences.
Heartworms is in reference to your love of The Shins. That's their 2017 album, which is quite a sunny album. It's kind of contrasts very much with the music you're making. Mm-hmm. But lyrically, I see a lot of similarities. What was it about their music that kind of appealed to you when you stumbled upon them as a band?
When I was doing my GCSEs, I was searching on YouTube and I typed in really cool indie music.
That's amazing.
And it came up with The Shins Australia. And then when I first heard that song, the melody was so nostalgic. There was something so familiar about it. And I couldn't understand why, and I just fell in love with it. And at that time, I was watching The Walking Dead as well for the first time. So there was all these things happening, like these new things I loved and enjoyed. So The Walking Dead, I was so obsessed with. And then The Shins just came out of nowhere. And the thing about James Mercer, it's the way he uses his vocal melodies and the cheeriness of it. But the nostalgic melody, something so painful, but also so familiar about it. It's just wonderful. And Australia is the song by The Shins I've listened to so much since I first ever heard it. I never get tired of it.
Yeah, that's a great song to kind of be introduced to the band too. It's a rock band song, just fun fact for listeners out there.
Yeah. But
I saw The Shins a couple of years back at Just Like Heaven. Have you seen them in concert before?
I haven't. So the Just Like Heaven, because I know it was Interpol and The Shins playing a couple of years ago. And I'm a bit of a, what would you say? I like to figure out if Paul Banks has met James Mercer kind of person. So when I saw that they were both playing that thing, I couldn't make it. And I've always wanted to see The Shins and never been able to. I went to Paul Banks's Instagram account to see if he was following The Shins, because he wasn't before. And he did follow them. So I was like, oh, they've met. That's so cool. That's the type of person I am. I'm very interested in, you know, not knowing, but knowing.
Yeah.
But I was really sad I couldn't make it. I got promised I could go, but I didn't end up going. And also it wasn't in England. So it was a bit pricey, but my dream would be to see them, definitely.
Well, you're going on a North American tour. Maybe, who knows, maybe we'll do a surprise show in one of the cities or something that you're in. You can catch
them. That'll be great.
At that concert, actually, one of the memorable moments was Interpol went on much later, so Nighttime, and mm-hmm. Pioneer to the Falls, the beginning of that song. It was like, I had chills. It was so special.
It's so chill, isn't it? It just runs through your blood.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you can feel it. It's amazing.
But that's how I feel about your music too. So you're definitely a performer I really would love to see in concert. So when you're here for your North American tour, please
like, come and see me.
I will definitely, I'll be there front row and center.
Amazing.
I actually wanted to ask you about Interpol as a musical influence of yours. Like I read somewhere that you once lined up 6 hours to be at the front to see them. Is this true?
Yeah, it is true. I've done it, I think, 3 times now. Just so I can get a good spot so I can see.
Yeah.
Because I'm a small person. I'm very small. I can't enjoy something if I can't see it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't line up for majority bands, but if it was at the Shins or Interpol or the ones I really love, I have to have the full experience. And the first time was at the Roundhouse. And I got a free ticket because I was working at the Roundhouse at the time. And I was lining up. But I was there from 2 p.m. and literally no one was there for that 3 hours. And I just didn't care. Like, I just wanted to make sure. Because they're not very, very big, as big as they are to me, but I thought they were. But I don't know, they're quite niche.
Yeah, they definitely are, especially because there's some people who feel like they need to be in a mood to listen to Interpol. Personally, yeah. I can listen to them at any time, but
yeah,
I really love that you waited in line like that, because that's something I've done quite often, and it really speaks to a love and passion for music and also just wanting that experience. Yeah, and if you are a smaller person, it's definitely wise to line up earlier. I know I'm quite tall, and I like to be up at the front, but if there's someone shorter behind me, I definitely want to move out of the way, because I just really want another person to experience like that magic of music. And you never know who it's going to inspire as well, so you want to always make sure
it's very important. You get the people at the front there where they're like nudge you out the way or elbow you in the stomach. I've had that so many times.
Yeah, me too. And it's like, can't we all just get along? The music is here to bring us together. I think that's what
imagine
the band
just saying
would want.
That to them though.
Yeah. Yeah, they probably wouldn't take it too well. They probably
they'd be like, shut up.
Start a fight. I have no idea. It's interesting that you waited, like you got this free ticket at the Roundhouse. You worked the coat check at one point, right?
Yeah, so I was doing lots of coat checking and ticket scanning. There's videos of me just randomly playing with a ticket scanner. Just like, I don't even know. I took loads of videos because I was mostly on my own. I'm a bit weird, so I didn't really make many friends at work.
Oh, I relate to that. I relate to that a lot, actually. More than you know, I could get into it, but I won't. It's funny because you ended up performing there too. Was it with sports team that you opened
for? It was. Yeah.
That's so incredible. Like, describe that experience of going from like working the coat check, waiting in line to see Interpol, and then actually performing on that stage.
It was insane because I was still working there when that came through. When it came through, I was like, I don't think I'm ready to do this. But I did it anyway, and I was so ready. It was incredible.
That's like an inspiring story. I think more musicians need to hear a story like that, because I know like so many of my friends who are musicians, they're trying to be in a space that is surrounded by music, and you always like dream of being on that stage yourself. So that's just really incredible.
Well, I was working there from the beginning of uni when I moved to London. So from 2019.
Yeah.
To see all these amazing bands that I love play there. And like, I saw Sisters of Mercy there. I saw Gary Numan, incredible, incredible artists. And I was like, yeah, one day I'll play it. And it just happened. And yeah, as you said, it's just so amazing.
You manifested that shit. You got in
I
there.
Did.
You manifested it. And we
I
love
do that.
That.
A lot.
We love that on the pod. We love to manifest. Actually, this kind of leads into something that we always try to manifest on this pod. It's like, if you could have a song of yours used in a movie directed by like any director, who would it be and why?
Okay. I've known this for a very long time. Tim Burton.
Oh, hell yes. I can totally see that.
At 9 years old, I watched Sweeney Todd and it was my whole personality. I was not allowed to watch it, but I'd come back from school, put the DVD on and just like stare at it. I know every single lyric from the back of my hand. And it's so dark. And with Corpse Bride, oh my gosh, I'm obsessed with it.
Me too.
Yeah, the music.
I really like that movie. The music's always so good.
I think him and I have very similar ways of thinking and in the way of our creativity and wanting to create a world of our own. And that's why I've always loved him since being a child. It's just I've always followed what he's doing. And I mean, Wednesday was great. Like, I freaking loved Wednesday. That was so
cool.
I loved what he did there and the music he used. And I was just like, damn, I wish my song was in it.
Next season, we're manifesting.
Season
two. Let's get it. Let's get it going.
Better happen. Let's go.
Someone's going to like take one of your songs now and make like an edit to it on TikTok with like Sweeney Todd. It's like, to me, I comply.
So cool.
Someone's going to do it.
Even if I did it.
Yeah, you do it. Exactly.
I'll do it.
I love that you bring up Tim Burton because in your music, yes, there's like this kind of dystopian dark element too, but there's also this like hope.
Yes, you hit the nail on the head there. That's what the name Heartworms is as well, because you can see it in like a humorous way, but also a dark way.
Yeah.
The name kind of does that. And that's what my music is. The melodies and the lyrics, there's humor and hope, but also so dark.
Yeah, exactly. Like one of my introductory films to Tim Burton was Nightmare Before Christmas. And of course, yes, there's like dark films, but there's always like something joyful to hold on to.
Yeah.
Which I think kind of leads even to your album name, A Comforting Notion. Mm-hmm. This thing that you can grasp and just hold on to so that you can move forward and just...
You've just explained it for me.
Great. I'm so... Well, because I'm such a fan of your music, like honestly. And, you know, this new track, May I Comply, is so impressive to me. But how did this song sort of come together? Like, how did the spark of the song occur, I guess?
So I started living with my father, who I haven't spoken to. I mean, I haven't lived with him before since I was 2 years old. So it was a very strange situation. I'm that type of person that dreams about, oh, having a dad. Okay, maybe it'll be perfect to live with him, because my little brother lives with him. So I was kind of living this fairy tale world, and so was my father. I was kind of lying to myself and pretending that this is such a normal situation when it wasn't. My little brother had to break off an engagement, and I know he doesn't really show his emotions a lot. So I just kind of trying to tell him throughout time being there, you know, that he's good enough and there's nothing about him that is a problem. It's just people are different, things don't work out. And I was going through a breakup at the time as well, a breakup after like 3-4 years. So I was trying to save other people, also not really focusing on myself. And yeah, it was very difficult. And with May I Comply, it was so quick. It just came out. I can't even explain it in detail because it happened so quickly. I don't even know how long it took me. Probably an hour to finalize the demo.
Wow.
It was all just purely in the moment. A lot of my songs are like that. I find meaning afterwards. Otherwise, I'll be like going crazy trying to be like, okay, maybe this should be there. Maybe that should be there. Unless I really have to do that. I did that Retributions. You know, it took me a while to write Retributions because the guitar line wasn't perfect. I kept overcomplicating it. And then all of a sudden I was like, wait, I could just simplify it to instead of like trying to make this crazy melody. May I Comply is an insane song and I love it because of how naturally it just burst out of me.
That's how some of the greatest songs are written.
Yeah.
When you're talking about Retributions, about, you know, overcomplicating it and simplifying it, I think that with all your music, there's a lot of chaos and noise elements, but it always still feels like anchored.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the most important thing is to show kind of restraint.
Yes. And that's like always been my weakness. I always say this like comparison, like when I was at primary school, I think I was 5 or 6 years old. And I was doing this like hand clay making thing. I put my handprint in some clay and the teacher said, you're only allowed to use 3 colours. But I ended up using everything and it looked absolutely shit. But I also use that comparison when it comes to not stopping myself from a limit, you know?
Yeah.
I don't always have a limit. I always can just like have so many other ideas. But when it comes to writing my melodies and the guitar melodies especially, they're always very simplified now because that's how I know I can write and that's how comfortable I am. Because I was trying to be too cool, you know? I was like, oh, maybe it's too simple. Maybe people think I can't play guitar, which I can't. But, you know, I just wanted to simplify it because I was like, no, it sounds amazing, it sounds beautiful. And as you said, more anchored.
I've been watching some of your performances on YouTube and you have such a unique stage presence. I can't even describe it. You just have this intense stare. What kind of went into creating this onstage persona?
So at the beginning of when I started the solo project, I had old band members and had a drummer who I was dating. This is at uni. And I didn't feel confident because I was dating someone in the band and I didn't want them to feel like I was trying to be like something. Or you kind of get that anxiety. And I didn't really find myself. And I was trying to get the right perfect band members who can stay in the band not in the band, but in as a band, you know, follow Heartworms, because I promised them, I was like, you know, this is going to do well, I promise you. All of it is written by me, and you need to just play what I tell you. So some of them, the people I worked with, were okay with that. Some of them weren't. So it was very up and down. So I wasn't very confident on stage. I still felt very shy. But at the same time, at the beginning of Heartworms, it wasn't dark stuff. It was quite happy-go-lucky. And then when the pandemic hit, things happened, the relationship ended. That's when I felt something like click inside me, like a wall just like crumbled down. I was just bursting through it, and I was running as fast as I could. And I had this idea. I was like, I want this to be dark, and I want to be powerful, and I want to be all these things I've always wanted to be, and I haven't been able to. Even as a child, you know, I wasn't really about being able to be who I want to be without being looked at so weirdly. And now, as being Heartworms, I am Heartworms, and I'm on stage, and I am in control. That's where the stare comes. I can look at things. I can make people feel uncomfortable, but also make people so hooked onto it. You know, sometimes I see people's faces and they can't take their eyes on me because I've like grabbed their attention in such a like a kind of uncomfortable way. Like, whoa, you know what I mean? People love that. And if someone did that to me as someone from an audience perspective, I'd freaking love that. It's such an amazing feeling when someone on stage with a great theatrical performance gives you attention.
Oh yeah, kind of throwing back to waiting in line for 6 hours for a band you really like. It was incredible to be at the front of a show and then the singer is just making eye contact with the whole audience, and it's like such an incredible experience that you provide to your fans.
Yeah, and it's important. It's a sensory experience, not just you playing music.
Yeah,
I see it as, okay, I wanted this idea for my Village Underground headline show. I wanted my friend to wave a big flag on stage. This just came out of nowhere, this idea, 15 minutes before on stage. I was like, get on stage, wave this flag and just stare right into the distance or at people and wave this flag. So people, they look at it, they're like, wow, something's about to happen. I wish I had more money to be able to do bigger things, but in the future, one day I will.
Oh, you will, for sure.
Yeah, I have to work with what I have. And you want to leave with being like, oh my God. It's like when you go to watch a movie and it's like a 4D experience, you like felt it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not really good at explaining it, but you want it to be a sensory experience. With Heartworms, it's very much like that.
Were there any like performances of other artists that you sort of look to as inspiration?
Definitely Prince and Michael Jackson. They're the two main people that I was obsessed with watching on YouTube. And, you know, like Prince's stares, you know, the way he stares, like that's a big inspiration. Like Michael Jackson's Dirty Diana music video is one of my favorite music videos because of its live performance. And it's all about the posture and the hand gestures and the timing.
Yeah.
It's like adding an accent to a lyric. You kind of like move that hand in that way and you stare up. I'm doing a lot of things right now, which you can't see, but...
I can picture it in my head.
But it's all these things that inspired me as a child, and I've just made it into my own.
That's incredible. Yeah. Your story of creating your onstage performance is sort of similar to how I picture Alison Mosshart of The Kills, who you're going to be doing a North American tour with. So congratulations. That's so cool. And I'm so excited.
Something really cool, just quickly. So I used to do contemporary and ballet for about 2 months, as much as I could afford it at the time when I was 13. And the first song I did it to was The Kills song, Future Starts Slow.
Oh, hell yes. That's a great song.
And that's how I found out about them.
Well, I'm sure you know of Alison Mosshart's like kind of story. Like she's very shy and very sort of like even meeting Jamie for the first time, very timid. And but if you watch her on stage, like so powerful, like such an incredible performance, and she really engages with the audience.
I'm really excited to see that because I haven't seen them live yet. I can't wait to see her off and then on stage.
It's so cool having Heartworms and The Kills together. That's going to be like a really incredible tour.
Yeah, I never knew that would happen.
Congratulations, because it's a really well-deserved tour. And I just think that more people need to hear your music and find out about Heartworms, and you're a rising star that I can't wait to see what happens for you next.
Thank you.
You worked with legendary producer Dan Carey and signed to his label Speedy Wonderground to work on your EP. And this is a pretty legendary producer. Like, what was it like working with Dan and coming together to work on your music?
It's amazing because when we first spoke, Dan and I, it was through Instagram. He followed me. And this is when the pandemic hit. So somehow he had loads of time to look at his phone. And he was like, whoa, I love your voice. And did you want me to send you some songs so you can sing on it? But he actually misspelled sing to ding. And I didn't realize until like literally a year later.
That's amazing.
But it's like our joke now, our running joke that we have. But I was like, yeah, sure, send me whatever. I was so starstruck because I know about Speedo Underground, I know about Dan Carey, and if you're signed to them, it's going to be big things and stuff. I was in my ex-partner's house at the time, and I told him, and we were really excited, and I went upstairs and I wrote lyrics to an instrumental Dan sent, and then that became our first song that we did together. And we didn't meet probably a year, and I met him at, I saw him at Wide Awake Festival or something. And I think he was drunk because I said hi and he's like, who the hell are you? But he looked at me that way. I was like, oh, cool, I'll leave you to it. And then I wrote my EP and my partner at the time, he's like, you should send it to Dan. He likes your stuff. And I was like, what if he says no? I can't deal with the rejection. I can't do it. And then I finally did it. And he answered really quickly. He replied with, holy fuck, this is amazing. And then Pierre, the other guy who runs Speedo, he was like, we need to get you on a show. And then, yeah, I played the show. Dan and Pierre came to the sound check and they were like, oh my God, yes, we will sign you. And then from then on, Dan and I was like talking so much. Like now we text a lot and he's like a family member to me now, you know,
yeah.
We care about each other and it's important. So when I went to the studio to record my EP, it was like I knew him forever and there was no awkwardness because I already went to that studio because I went to a few parties, which was in a studio. So I already was familiar with it. But no, it was incredible. And Dan and I worked together so well. I mean, I'm not afraid to say no, which is great as well, because I feel like if I was with someone who I didn't know, I'd be afraid to say no if there was something I wasn't sure about.
That's a really hard thing to do, actually, to say no as a new artist, especially. Like, I remember years ago, I was watching a chairlift interview and Carolyn Polachek was like, I started to become a better artist when I learned to say no, because it's like, it's really easy to feel, I think, intimidated when you're first starting out and unsure of like referring to another person. So that really speaks to your like strength as an artist that comes through in your songs and your performances. A Comforting Notion is one of my favorite EPs that came out of this year.
Thank you. That's so kind.
When I first heard Consistent Dedication, Retributions of an Awful Life, I was like so stunned. I'm sure I was like as stunned as Dan Carey when he heard your EP. Makes sense why his mind was blown, because mine was too. I was like, oh my gosh, like this is my music. Like I love everything I'm hearing. You know, a song like Consistent Dedication, like I was reading that you were inspired by Funk Guitar Tone from the Scissor Sisters track, The Skins. Like, that's really cool. And you know, what's also interesting is you really did something different. Like, it's eerily danceable.
Yes.
Amidst these, like, dystopian elements. Mm-hmm. What was the kind of, like, underlying, I guess, thematic elements of this EP that you wanted to touch on?
To be honest, when I wrote it, I came up with the ideas for them at the same time within the week. And I knew that I wanted it all to be an EP because it all fitted well together. It told a story and it made sense to me.
Yeah.
I had black and white aesthetic, you know, that's cool. And A Comforting Notion is just a brilliant name for it. And I really knew that. So I had all of this on SoundCloud and the first demos, oh my gosh, like, I actually might release them one day. They're pretty good, but not. But yeah, I had this idea. It was more of like a feeling, like I felt what it was going to be like. And I don't like to plan things too much. I'm a bit of a, I'll do everything in one go. Unless I really have to plan, I do struggle with that. With this EP, when I sent it to Dan and then when we recorded it, then it came to life even more. And then I understood it more because of the characteristic of each song came out. You know, we added a few bits in, we added some more cool synths. And I'm the type of person that I give Dan the demos and we put it into a project, into Logic, and I tell him all the bits I want to keep, even if they were like plugins on my computer. I'm like, I like the sound of that, you know?
Yeah.
He's like, cool, okay, maybe we can send it through another synth so we can layer it. So, you know, I always tell him that I'm not really up for changing anything unless it really needs to be changed.
Yeah.
A Comforting Notion, yeah, changed a lot. I love the beginning of it because my telephone vocals.
Yes.
You know, how they're very hard to understand. All of a sudden my vocals come in, and Dan did that. And I was like, whoa, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And throughout listening to the songs, I already had an idea for 24 Hours music video, even by the first time I wrote it. And I struggled a lot at secondary school, or school in general. I was like, I want this song to be based in a school, and I want it to show all the difficulties I had to go through, or something in a school.
Yeah.
And then it's so strange, because we weren't going to do a music video for 24 Hours. We just had Retributions, and we did Consistent Dedication. But then Gilbert Trejo, out of the blue, tagged me on a post on Instagram, or like a story, saying, this artist is so cool. And he bought a t-shirt as well. And then I replied, I was like, thank you so much. Like, this is so cool. And then from that conversation, he had like a meeting in London for something, and he was trying to pick up a certain shirt, which is actually this Vivienne Westwood parachute shirt, if you're familiar with that.
Very punk.
It's so punk. He's like, wait, we can do something because I'm in London. And you're like, wait, should we do music for 24 hours? And I sent him this idea that I had, and he sent back an idea, and it was perfect. For this EP, it just happened so naturally and so beautifully, and like so unplanned, but perfectly how I wanted it to be.
That music video for 24 Hours is really cool. And I've read somewhere that in school, like especially in, I think, uni, like you often felt it was hard for you to get people to be on board with you, or like you ended up proving at the end of your schooling that with an award that you won that, you know, you can really do this. How did you sort of deal with that?
I always struggled at school to communicate. I've only recently discovered this year I'm on the spectrum. So it all kind of comes into perspective.
Yeah.
Because I never really understood what people would say to me if they meant something else. You know, I was more of like a fact, like you got to tell me the facts. I was very honest to people. I'd always say how I thought and say what I was thinking straight up. There was no filter. And I always struggled to be in groups, but I was the one that was like sitting on my own and always listening to people's conversations and analyzing how people are and why they're speaking that way, why are they sitting that way, you know?
Yeah.
It was just the same throughout my whole life, you know, through secondary school, it was the same. I was always blamed for things, or I don't even know, I don't really understand what it was, to be honest. And then I came to college, and that's when I was like, okay, I want to be a musician. And the few people in my class I was friends with outside of college, they were all just really funny about me, because they were like, oh yeah, I don't know why she's in this. She just wants to be in this class because we're in here, kind of thing, kind of attitude.
Yeah.
So I always felt like I didn't belong there, or like I wasn't supposed to be there because they made me feel that way. But I'm the type of person that doesn't stand down.
Yeah.
You know, I don't actually give a flying fuck what you think, because I want to do this and I can prove to you that I can. I couldn't see the awkwardness behind the situation, but I think everyone else could. But I just carried on, you know, and no one would think I was good or good enough. You know, I'd yeah. do performances and I'd think they were pretty good, but I guess they were just too up their own asses being like, yeah, you know.
Or jealous.
Well, you know, it's one of those things I just would never know. I just always thought they just hated me and I hated what I did. And when it came to the award, that was insane, because I would be at college till the very late evening. I'd be bursting into tears because I just wanted to get it right and I couldn't get things right. I couldn't, because I can't write essays. I find it difficult to word things. And I think that's why I've won the award, because my tutors would see me and they were like, Judge, are you okay? Is everything okay? I literally like lost some kind of voice recorder device, which was the college's, and I was bursting into tears with that as well. It's a very stressful college life. And my nose got broken by a girl at a party as well.
Oh, so shit.
I was going through a lot at the time. And I think the tutors saw that. So they gave me that award. It was music as well, but it was more about the strength that I had.
Yeah.
I still have that award. It's just on the left, right next to me. And when I got that, I remember seeing people's faces. Like, it was so, oh, I could feel it all the time every time I think about it. It gave me so much joy because they were so confused.
Very similar thing happened to me, but I won't get into it because I don't want to derail the story, because it's a really inspiring story to hear. And
maybe when we meet in America, we can talk about it.
Yeah. Obviously, I think your teachers probably were like, no, we see talent. So, and we can see someone who's working hard. And
I needed that as well. You know, I need that thing to push me further.
Yeah, exactly. There's different people who've talked to me about those different occasions where they're in a field where, you know, they're not taken seriously.
Yeah.
And it can be very hard. So kudos to you.
Thank you.
You know, when I checked you out, I was like, oh, this is a person who really like knows themselves well enough to create this like very distinctive imagery that accompanies all your music, from the photos you post on Instagram to like your music videos. How did you land on accompanying like these aesthetic choices to represent heartworms and your persona and music?
So I fall in love with things. And when I fall in love with them, they take over me with aircraft. I've always been interested in military history, but I was always afraid to because of it being male dominated.
Yeah.
And I think just after the pandemic, a lot of things happened after the pandemic. It's like it woke something up in everyone. I watched a Spitfire documentary and I started crying because something about it, the feeling it reflects, the motion of it in the sky. And because I work at RAF Hendon Museum, I don't at the moment because I'm quite busy, but when I do, it's being in right next to an aircraft, the body of it, the shape. You can like even taste it. It's the smell of it. It's just incredible. And that's something that makes me who I am.
Yeah.
I love so many things and I'm not afraid to show it in my music when I know it's the right thing to bring into the aesthetic, you know? I mean, I'm not going to bring in my knitting.
Why not?
You know what? Actually, that is such a good idea.
I think knitting rocks. You could definitely make it very punk, I swear.
Oh, I just came up with such a good idea. It'd be like a part of music of me knitting in the corner, in the dark corner. I'm like knitting something quite fucked up. Anyway.
I won't steal it. That's all yours.
Good. But I have my teddy that I've had since I was 2 years old called Woof Woof. He's a little doggy. Oh. And I have photos of him in my pram and I have never let him go. And he's a massive influence to me. It's very strange, but I have a connection with him.
That's amazing.
It's great. And Alan Turing, so you know Alan Turing.
Yeah.
I went to Bletchley Park for their 1940s day, 1940s week, and his teddy bear that he used to talk to and bring everywhere with him was inside a glass cabinet. And I was like, oh my gosh, I get that same feeling with Woof Woof. Oh. He's like my little sidekick and I connect with him. He's such an old boy now. I like look at him and he looks old. Like, he has it in his eyes. I'm bringing that in actually for next year. I'm going to record a music video with Gilbert Trejo when I'm in America doing the tour. We're doing a little travel music video.
Oh, sick.
With Woof Woof, he's going to be my like partner in it. When I love something, I bring it in. I'm not afraid to bring it into the aesthetic because I need people to know who I am. I need to be seen and that's my way.
It's interesting, this like aircraft interest of yours, because like I don't meet too many people with that interest.
Yeah.
Was wondering if you actually had an aircraft or military history fact that might spark someone's interest in the topic.
When it comes to trying to spark someone's interest in it, I think mine would be a fact. It would just be like, come with me, let me show you a Spitfire.
Yeah. And then I haven't seen one, so.
Yeah. I mean, like what I do is like, if you ever came here, I would like bring you to RAF Hendon. I did this with Gilbert. I'll be like, stand next to it and tell me how you feel. And it will spark something. And it sparks something in Gilbert. You know, he stood under a Spitfire, a Mark 24. He posted a photo of it on his Instagram. And I told him all the facts about it. So he put it in his caption. You know, he felt that. And that's what I do. I'd have to bring you to see it.
I'd be down for that.
Let's make it happen.
Let's make it happen. Let's manifest it. All your style is really cool. I read that it's kind of getting hot for you to perform in military attire, which you're kind of doing in the beginning. Like, I totally get that. I do love the military berets and like the military jackets. Actually, it was like a big thing when I was in like high school and stuff to like just go to a military surplus and like you could get it really cheap and just go there and grab a jacket. It was even like a thing in like Freaks and Geeks, the show that the Judd Apatow show. Yeah, exactly. And the main character, she's has like this cool military jacket.
Yeah, that like baggy green one. I literally dressed like her for about a month.
That's so cool. I could totally see you doing that. Yeah, that show, like I was like, you know what? I kind of want a military jacket too. Like,
oh, I wish really I could watch it again, but they took off Netflix.
They got to bring it back. Let's manifest it. Netflix, bring it back.
Please.
Do you ever see people at your shows wearing like clothes that are similar to what you've used for your visuals?
To be honest with you, it's very hard to kind of see what people are wearing. But I have seen someone dress literally so similar to me when I was at this pub in Victoria Dalston. Everyone who was there, they were like, Jojo, I swear I just saw you, but you were wearing your outfit. And it was because I tuck my hair behind my ears when I wear my military beret. It's a very specific thing I do.
Yeah.
So this girl who was doing it, she literally did the exact same thing. And I saw her, I was like, whoa, that's so cool. She looks exactly like me. So that's the only time I've ever seen someone not intentionally dress like me, but seen someone dress similar to me, which I've never seen before. I have very, very specific things that I do to make it look different, if that makes sense. But with my look now, I kind of like it that I haven't seen people wear similar stuff to me yet. But I am excited to see that when it does come to that, because you will be seeing them at the front row, you know?
Yeah, I'll be at the front row in a military beret, military jacket.
That would be great. I want to see loads of that. I want people to not be afraid to do that.
I wanted to kind of shift a bit to just talking about this incredible post-punk scene that's blossomed in the UK and in London. You know, it was sort of coming up before the pandemic. Like, I was hearing of these bands in 2018, 2019, but it seemed like there was like almost a newfound appreciation of post-punk coming from the UK, like post-pandemic almost. Like, yeah. There's all these bands like Black Country New Road, like Sports Team, Squid, Yard Act, Dry Cleaning. Why do you think that we are seeing like this newfound appreciation?
I'm not really sure. I mean, it's probably, yes, something to do with the pandemic. I guess when people are forced to do things, they like need a way to let out. And for the artists, they're forced to do things such as, you know, stay inside. And like, we artists need some way of, this is how I felt anyway. We needed a way to speak about it and to be angry about it. And that post-punk and punk are such a great way of doing that.
Yeah.
You know, you can say what you want and it sounds fucking great.
Even when we think of like the first iteration of post-punk and the birth of the genre, almost like when Margaret Thatcher was like in power and stuff mm-hmm. like that. I think mm-hmm. it is sometimes a response to the very traumatic things that yeah. are happening in the culture and just all around. So I think it makes sense. There's this old-fashioned thrill of people playing in a room together with post-punk that I think people appreciate, like feeding off an energy, like despite like dark thematic elements. You see shows from like any post-punk band or of that genre and everyone's just losing their shit.
Yeah. I started going to a lot of these like post-punk shows before the pandemic because of the person I was dating at the time. So I went to the Windmill for the first time and I saw Italian 90 and Murder Capital. Murder Capital were headlining. My experience with these shows, I can either be very loud and like go into the mosh pit and do whatever, or sometimes I can't. But I do see people, yeah, just losing their absolute shit. And it's like something glazes over their eyes and they're like, yeah, and joining in and the sweat and the smell. It is a place of release.
And that's what people need and to keep them inspired. And yeah. It's a comforting notion for
exactly.
sure.
Exactly.
I just have a few questions left for you. I really enjoyed talking to you. I could talk to you all day. I wanted to ask you about this meeting you had with Pete Doherty this past year. I think he was in a van. Can you tell me about this meeting?
Okay. So Pete, first of all, is a very interesting human being. And so I was with Dave Haslam. He was interviewing Pete for probably his book. I can't really remember, but I know he was interviewing him at Earth Hackney. And Dave Haslam, he warned me before. He was like, whatever they give you, don't take it. I was like, okay, cool. Yeah, I'm pretty good at doing that, so don't worry. So we got to the hotel and I met Pete there and he was wearing this long, like kind of thobe. Like thobe outfit.
That sounds like Pete. Yeah.
With some sandals. And we all sat down, shook his hand and met his team and chatted for a bit. And I decided to pop out for a cigarette when I was smoking at the time. And I asked him for a lighter. And he ended up giving me this like white lighter and I'd lost it now, but
those are lucky.
Yeah, lucky white lighter, which I lost. And I popped off some air and then came back in and went to sit down and I looked at the table I was sitting at and there was like a pile of gummies just in front of me. And then I like kind of looked at them and I looked at Dave and then Dave gave me that look of like, don't take it, don't touch them. And I was like, okay, I won't. But yeah, we all went into the van together to travel from the hotel to Earth Hackney to do the interview. Most of the journey was just beautiful, actually, because Pete was sitting right behind me. I was in the front seat. Dave was sitting on the right side of Pete. And we were all looking outside the window. And Pete was like, oh, I've been to a party over there. I don't remember who lived there. I can't remember his name. But he was just pointing at these places and saying, yeah, I remember that place. Or I haven't been there for a while. And you know, it was so interesting just seeing that. I like Libertines, you know, I like the music, but I wasn't a super fan. It was so nice to see it from someone who wasn't a super fan, but to see him as like just a general person, because it's quite natural.
Yeah.
And he told me a beautiful story about like a teddy bear tied to a lamppost. And this teddy bear had his note on it saying, please take me home. I want to be hugged. And it made me cry. And I was like, oh my gosh, like this man's soul is so broken.
Yeah, he's such a softy, I swear.
He really is. And to be honest with you, like, I hope he's okay. And his new mini documentary with Luther was great.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. I can't wait. What did you think of it?
Yeah, it was brilliant. He's exactly the way he is.
I can't wait to watch it.
I'd love to meet him again, definitely.
Oh, it'll happen for sure. Last question for you is, if you could cover a song for one of your performances, like, what would it be?
Dirty Diana.
Oh, Dirty Diana. Yeah, yeah, you should do it. I want to hear this version, the Heartworms version of Dirty Diana.
I've been trying to figure out a way to do it, so.
Please, please. I think you would do an awesome cover of that. It's been so great talking to you today. I've been
Thank
so excited
you.
All week, looking forward to this episode with
Me
you.
Me too.
Oh, that's good to hear.
I've been listening to some of the podcasts you've done to build myself up to, and I'm like, this is so cool. I'm really excited. You seem lovely, and you are.
Thank you. So are you. And I feel like Heartworms is music we really need. And it just makes me so excited about life. And that's what music should do for everyone. So for listeners, make sure to follow Heartworms on Instagram at I Am Heartworms and keep an eye out for more music because it's coming soon. I think I watched a performance of yours and you performed another unreleased song.
Oh, yes.
Very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, so the new stuff is great.
Keep me posted and we'll plug it on the gram for sure. Thank you so much for coming on the pod and see you later.
Thank you.